Thank you so much for your wonderful, wonderful welcome this morning. It's great to be here. Some of you I've met many times, some of you I've heard about, and it's great to meet you now. And it's a real privilege to be here. If you thought Victoria sounded English, well, maybe I sound a bit more English. We think she now sounds really American. I was telling them last night at dinner table last night that I was hearing about a young wife who was asked by her husband just a few weeks before her birthday what she would like for a birthday present. And she said, "Oh, do you know, I'd love to be 8 again, or even 10. And on the morning of her birthday, her husband woke her up and he took her to Six Flags. And she was taken on everything. She went up and down and round and about, and he plied her with soda and he gave her candy, and she felt as nauseous as she'd ever felt in her whole life. And then at the end of the day, he whisked her off to McDonald's and he bought her a Happy Meal. And then he took her home and he made her chocolate milk and he tucked her up in bed and he said, 'Honey, how did you feel to be 10 again?' 'Oh,' she said, 'I didn't mean my age, I meant my dress size.'" So I just tell you that to help you to get used to my rather strange accent, which I think actually the original Virginians probably had. Well, it's a great joy and a great privilege to be with you this morning. On your tables, there are some paper notes that if you want to follow along, you can, because I want to talk to you a little bit about soul fatigue. And when Victoria suggested that to me, I began to think and pray through what the Lord might want me to say to you this morning and what we might share together. And I sent her some of my notes and some of my questions that I thought we could look at. And she said, "Oh, we did that last time." And I said, "But doesn't that mean actually that's on the Lord's heart for us? He's wanting us to think about it, to go a little bit deeper. How extraordinary that last time speaker and I should come up with such similar things." And so some of it may feel, we did this last time, but actually I want us to think about it as the Lord saying, let's go a bit deeper. Let's refresh. Let's remind ourselves. And let's see what the Lord wants to say to us this morning. So let me ask you, is anybody feeling tired this morning? Maybe not. Maybe you leapt out of bed. Oh, you can't see it terribly brightly. I have 6 grandchildren. They're fabulous. I have 3 who are 6 and 3 who are 4. And somehow all 3 of my children had their children all at the same time. It's great. Anyway, this is a grandson and a granddaughter called Will and Sophie, who are very mischievous. And maybe like them, you leapt out of bed in the morning, wide awake and raring to go this morning, and a cup of coffee would just have been one thing too many because you were so full of vitality. Or maybe not. Maybe you woke up feeling rather fatigued, a little bit tired. I have to tell you, that's after they spent 2 days with me. We had cousin camp earlier this summer, and I had, well, Jonah and Toby didn't come for some reason, but the English grandchildren came, and I had 2 days of just the cousins without their parents. It was fabulous. That's what they looked like afterwards. Is that what you look like this morning? Is that how you felt when you got out of bed this morning? And it's how we are so often, isn't it? I mean, I know what it's like to have 3 children under 3. It's tiring, it's exhausting. But even as they grow up, I tell you, it gets more tiring, more exhausting. But actually, isn't that what our world is like today? We are all probably constantly weary. And it's a weariness of the spirit as well. It's that constant tiredness which actually isn't solved just by one good night's sleep. And it's a weariness that makes it difficult, I think for me, I don't know about it for you, but it makes it difficult to live the life, the kind of life that I know God wants me to live, because I'm just so constantly weary. Wearied with all that life throws at me. We're hurrying, we're rushing. The busyness of life means it's difficult to reach that true spiritual potential, which we know is there somewhere inside us. And I think for most of us, it's not because we're wanting to defy God or be away from him. It's just that we're tired and hurried and preoccupied. We're living in an insane world. Don't you feel that sometimes? And it has an insane pace of life, and it has insane expectations which it puts upon us. And I think for many of us, we've come to expect this and accept it and say that soul weariness is just normal. That's how it is. I saw the film Suffragette the other day. I don't know if you've seen it yet. I don't even know if it's come out in the States yet. It's Carey Mulligan's latest film. And she, you may know, she's married to Marcus Mumford, who is Mumford and Sons. Well, Carey is a great actress. And her latest film, Suffragette, is the story of women about 100 years ago, just over, campaigning to get the vote. Next time you think you won't bother to vote, because what difference does it make? Go and see what these women went through to make sure you and I could vote. Anyway, there are two characters in it, played by Carey Mulligan and Anne-Marie Duff, who are great friends. And at one stage, and there's the picture of it, Anne-Marie Duff turns to Carey Mulligan and says, "I am just always so tired." And you think it probably was the same for them as it is for us. It's not just a modern phenomenon. Women have always been tired with all that they have to do. A social journalist, Caitlin Moran, was writing just about 3 weeks ago in a weekend publication. She said, "Women are exhausted. It's partly due to demands we put on ourselves. It's partly due to the perception that we ought to be superwoman. And it's partly just how life is." Is that depressing or what? We're physically stressed by the demands of family and work and shopping and cooking and keeping up with social media. Does anybody keep up with social media? Even simply trying to get dressed in the morning, isn't that exhausting? Okay, so I have been to the grocery store in my PJs, and it was only a few years ago. It wasn't when I had small children either. I had a big coat on over the top and my long winter boots. Life is exhausting. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 4. And this is from a translation called The Message by Eugene Peterson, which some of you may know. "Compared to what's coming," Paul writes to the church in Corinth, "compared to what's coming, living conditions around here seem like a stopover in an unfurnished shack, and we're tired of it." Has he been to my house, or was it your house he went to? Even Paul, writing to the church at Corinth, knew about this groaning and tiredness and fatigue with the world and its general pace of life. Of course, he had glimpsed heaven, haven't we all? We've had that glimpse of heaven. And we know what it could be like in comparison. And we know that one day it will be like that in heaven. It will be wonderful. But actually, that just adds to my stress levels because I want it to be like that now. So I don't know about you, but I admit that I have soul fatigue. And you're thinking, she lives in a retreat house. Isn't it all nice and calm and peaceful and everybody's on retreat? Yes, but somebody has to make it happen so that they could be like that. I'm going to list 3 signs of soul fatigue that you can take a look and see if you have them or not. You can give yourself a Y for yes if you have them, or an N for no if you've not. Although you're probably too tired to take a pen out to bother to write it down. So the first sign is a sense of never having enough time, always being rushed. There are never enough hours in the day to do everything you have to do, let alone all the things you ought to do or the things you want to do. Because we're all obsessed with going faster. We go faster and look for things to help us to get more done so that we have more time to help us to get things done, so that we have more time to... Well, you get the idea. And everything is done to help us to go faster. Faster? We can send a package by Federal Express. We can do our accounts with Quicken. You can slim with Slim Fast. Does anybody use that these days? You can swim in clothes made by Speedo. It's all done to make us think everything happens quickly. And who takes time to cook a feast from scratch when you can buy a packet and stick it in the microwave? And yet, aren't we left feeling there is so much to do and so little time in which to do it? Which apparently was first said by King Charles on his deathbed in the 17th century. And I think, well, that's all right for him. He'd only got to die. He hasn't seen my to-do list. I'd like to talk more about this, but there's no time, so let's move on to the second one. A sense of difficulty making decisions. I wonder if you wrestle with this one. Put up your hand if you find it difficult to make a decision, or maybe you can't decide whether you have difficulties making decisions. Because apparently we're suffering from what those who know call choice overload. There is too much choice. I remember when we had first moved to Virginia, and I was on my way home from work, and I just wanted to call into the grocery store and buy a small pint of ordinary milk. So I stopped at Giant and tore into the store because I was late, rushed around to where the milk was, and I took one look at the milk. I wanted one pint of ordinary milk. And I have to say, I burst into tears. I was so overwhelmed with the choice of milk that I didn't know what to choose. We have such choice these days. Now, suppose, for instance, you want to wash your hair. You go to the store to buy some shampoo. 100 years ago, you simply used soap. Now, if you walk into CVS, you can get shampoo for limp hair, shampoo for brittle hair, shampoo for dry hair, coloured hair, normal. Does anybody have normal hair? You can get shampoo with egg in it, shampoo with seaweed in it, argan oil, beer, vitamins, dandruff to cure dandruff, I hasten to add, doesn't have it in the shampoo. You can have shampoo to smell like any kind of flower, any kind of fruit, any kind of vegetable. That's just one manufacturer and that's just one size. Where do you start? What do you choose? Or supposing you think, well, I'm going to spend some time with the Lord this morning. I will go and get my Bible. Okay, which one? I have got, and I thought I'd write these down, I looked at the bookshelf. I have the Jerusalem Bible, the Authorised Bible, the TEV, NEB, LB, GNB, RSV, NIV, NRSV, Amplified, Study, Application, the Message, the Passion, and the Greek. I've got paperbacks, hardbacks, leather-bound, and plastic. Which one shall I choose? Oh, it's too difficult. Let's move on. And even if you want to paint your house, have you looked at the colour charts recently? How do you choose? It's too difficult. We have choice overload. And we live in a society that is paid by, some people are paid, to give us chronic discontent and to say you should have more choice because then you'll be happier. And so 1,000 products cry out at us from everywhere. All these adverts say, buy me, use me, dry me, put me in your hair. You'll be happier if you have a bigger house, a larger Twitter following. You'll be happier if you have a wrinkle-free face, whiter teeth. If you have fresher breath, a slimmer body, abs made of steel, a flat stomach. Of course, most of us suffer from furniture disease because our chest is in our drawers, and so, of course, we feel most discontent. And our economy is built on discontent. You need more choice. You need more of this. If you just had that, you'd be happier. To be or not to be, it's always been a question. Shall I continue or shall we move on? Choice. Not to decide is to decide, they tell us. So let's have a look at the third. The third thing of soul weariness, soul fatigue, is a sense of superficiality in my relationship with God. I do want to know God. I do want to get to know him better. I do want to follow his plans for my life. But somehow there isn't the time, or I don't make the time. There's so much choice in what to do. And my worship becomes sporadic. My time with God is on and off because my days are so full. And I'm not spending hours a day studying his word, taking time with him, immersing myself in his company and being transformed with him. Life is just busy One day I'll get round to it. I remember thinking that when I was a young mum. Well, one day I'll get round to it. I'm now an old mum and I'm still thinking, one day I'll get round to it. Life is busy. So this is soul fatigue. Does it resonate with you? A sense of not having enough time and always being in a rush. A difficulty making choices and decisions because we're overwhelmed by it all. And a superficiality in our relationship with the Lord. And isn't it what our society as a whole suffers from? People who are indecisive, overloaded, superficial, and unconnected to God. And we've come to accept that as the norm, sadly. But I think there is a better way. There is another way. And we know, don't we, actually, if we're totally honest with ourselves, there is another way to do life and to do it radically different from those around us. So that we don't just drift into the way the world is, but we live the lives we know the Lord wants us to live. Matthew chapter 11, Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." And doesn't something in you go, oh yes, rest for my soul. That's what I need. I actually love it in the Message translation. I think it's so helpful. Are you tired?
Yes.
Are you worn out? Yes. Are you burnt out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Those are the words of Jesus to you, his daughter. He wants you, tired and worn out, to come to him and to learn the unforced rhythms of grace. You see, weariness and fatigue are not what God had in mind. They're not his will for our lives and our souls, and they should not be accepted as normal and inevitable. Jesus offers another way, and that's what I signed up for. I don't know about you. That's what we are to live, and that's what we're to model for other people. We need to come to the Good Shepherd and allow him to restore our souls. And how can we do that? Because if we want to do it, we know that's what we want to do. We know that's what he's welcoming us into. But how do we actually do it? Because the family still needs to be fed. The washing still needs to be done. There's still a lot to do. We have busy schedules and money worries and family matters. And it all gets in the way, doesn't it? And again, the cycle starts. We begin to worry. We begin to fret. And we try to do it our way. Well, as we mentioned, I run a small, there's me in front of my house. Little retreat house in the Cotswolds in England. And lots of lovely Christians who are burnt out, mostly on religion, because a lot of them are ministers and pastors. And they come for 2 or 3 days of peace and quiet and pampering. And they're allowed to stay in bed as long as they like. I take them breakfast in bed in the morning. And 23 hours is the record so far for staying in bed. And we have morning prayers, morning and evening. And it's just, I think it's wonderful. People love it, especially the downstairs loo, as we call it. And you're saying, well, that would be lovely, Penelope. I'd love to come and stay in your retreat house. But I can't. Of course you can't. You've got small children. You've got families. You've got a life to live here. Let's be real. Actually, what we need today is not to go rushing off to the Cotswolds, lovely as that would be. We all need a whole lot of coffee, and God in our lives. So for this busy season, when you have small children and everything else that's going on in your life, what would be a good way to find rest for your souls and to restore the natural, unforced rhythm of grace that God wants to give you? Some of you may have read a little book called Practicing the Presence of God. It was written by a monk, Brother Lawrence, in the 17th century. And he was a deeply spiritual man. He became a Christian at the age of 18. And then, as young men did in those days, he went off to be a soldier. But in his early 20s, he decided that actually he'd rather be a monk, because then he could spend all day praising God and praying and being in the Lord's presence. What he discovered was that monks don't spend all day doing that. And in fact, he was assigned to the kitchen. So he knew what it was like to be washing the pots and pans and peeling the potatoes and working jolly hard all day. The reality was very different to what he had imagined it would be like. And this is what he wrote. The time of busyness does not with me differ from the time of prayer. And in the noise and clutter of my kitchen, while several persons, did he have children, are calling me at the same time for different things, I possess God in as great a tranquility as if I were upon my knees at the Blessed Sacrament. He had learnt the secret of remaining with God, being in God's presence, no matter what he was doing, which was mostly cooking and washing up in the kitchen. He had learnt the secret of being in God's presence, even when there was so much going on around him. He said, God does not ask much of us, merely a thought of him from time to time, a little act of adoration. Sometimes to ask for his grace, sometimes to offer him your sufferings, at other times to thank him for the graces, past and present, he has bestowed on you. In the midst of your troubles, to take solace in him as often as you can. Lift up your heart to him during your meals, when you're in company. The least little remembrance will always be the most pleasing to him. One need not cry out very loudly. He is nearer to us than we think. I just love that. A thought of him from time to time. Lift your heart to him during your meals and when you're with company. We needn't cry out very loudly. He's nearer than we think. We must trust God once and for all and abandon ourselves to him alone. This difficult task necessarily requires perseverance and continual conversation with God in all activities, great and small, speaking humbly and talking lovingly with him at all times, at every moment, without rule or system. We can do that, can't we? We can talk to God wherever we are, whenever we are, whether we're at the meal table or whether we're in company. He said you've got to persevere to do it. But continually be in conversation with God in all your activities, great or small. And this isn't a monk who was on his knees all day. This is a monk who was in the kitchen, working hard at the ordinary, everyday part of life. A little lifting up of the heart suffices, a little remembrance of God, an interior act of adoration. A bit like when a soldier is on the march and with his sword in hand, his prayers have to be so short, but nevertheless are very pleasing to God. And far from making a soldier lose his courage on the most dangerous occasions, bolster it. Do you ever feel like a soldier on a march when you're with your children? Let him think of God as much as possible so that he will gradually become accustomed to this little but holy exercise. No one will notice it. And nothing is easier than to repeat often during the day these little acts of interior adoration. So no matter what you're doing, no matter how busy, those little acts of adoration, constantly turning our face back to God and remembering he is nearer to us than we think. So we need to take little retreats throughout the day. And is it really possible to do anything in a one-minute retreat? I said to Victoria, I want to teach them how to do a one-minute retreat. Oh, we did that last time, she said. Most people said it was boring. Their mind wandered. You did. you said they said their minds wandered. They didn't know what to do. And I was looking at the shopping list, you said. What do you do in a one-minute retreat? Is it possible to do anything that's really precious? Brother Lawrence talked about lifting up little acts of adoration to God. There was another monk earlier than Brother Lawrence called Ignatius, St. Ignatius of Loyola. And he had a number of monks whom he was training and discipling to grow more and more like the Lord Jesus. And he taught them various what he called spiritual exercises. And one of the things he taught them to do was the daily examination of conscience, which is sometimes called the examen for short. And he said, do it once a day to start with, probably last thing at night. And then as you get more holy, do we want to get more holy? We want to get more like the Lord. He said, as you get more holy, do it twice a day and then maybe three times a day and then just keep doing it because it'll help you to focus on God. So I think we should try this because it's such a wonderful thing to do and it takes as long as you like it to do or as short as you need it to be. It's a minute to turn away from what you're doing and just to focus on God in a very easy to remember way. Now, I have to say different things work for different people. And if it helps, use it. If it doesn't, try something else. That's not me, that's Ignatius, that's what he said. If it helps, use it. If it doesn't, try something else. Some of you are wild extroverts, and the thought of spending 24 hours on retreat doing nothing would drive you crazy. I tell you, I once did a 10-day silent retreat, you'll know that I'm mad. If you're an extrovert, you can't do that. You have a different sort of personality, and you need to find things that help you to focus on God. But let me try the examen with you, and you can see if this is a way that would help you to focus on God just for a minute. So let's do it. I'm just going to talk us through it very quickly and very briefly for a minute so that you know what to do. The first thing you'll need to do is put your pens down, if you have a pen in your hand, and just to move your hands, and you may want to close your eyes, put your hands palms up, resting on your legs so that they're not touching anything. Just put them down and rest them as a symbol that they're open to receiving what God wants you to receive. And then close your eyes so that you're not looking at me or anybody else. And take a deep breath. Now take another deep breath. And then in your mind's eye, go to your favorite beautiful place. And I'm not going to tell you where that is because you know where it is. Nobody else does. Go to your most beautiful favorite place. And take another deep breath. And then look back over the past few hours, or maybe over yesterday, and give thanks for three or four things that were blessings from the Lord. Something which gave you life. Three or four little miracles. Your child's laugh, hot cup of coffee, beautiful leaves on a tree, the answer to a prayer, God's steadfast, unfailing love. Give thanks for three or four things. And now we look back again, and this time we ask the Lord to point out the times we've let him down. The times when we weren't what we should have been. The times when we didn't put the things of the kingdom first. And we tell the Lord how sorry we are. And we receive his forgiveness. And then we look forward. We think about what we are returning to, what lies ahead of us over the next 24 hours. And we commit those hours to Him. If there's something difficult, we ask Him to be there with us in it. We invite Him into any difficulties that lie ahead, and we ask Him to walk with us no matter what happens over the next 24 hours. And then you gently come back into the room and you thank God for what you have just experienced of Him. And you've been gone for 1 minute. Now you may want to write down those three things so that you remember what it is you have to do. You look back with gratitude, you look back with confession, and then you look forward with anticipation. Three very simple things. And it's a very easy way to teach your children to pray, because they can remember it too. And it can take as long or as short as you like. And you can do it whenever you like. It's a very easy way to have a 1 minute retreat and to go into God's presence and just recalling His blessings that we probably haven't even noticed over the last few hours. It's amazing the difference that that can make. But aren't there times when even 60 seconds, 1 minute seems too long? I just don't have a minute to spare. We need something quick and instant. The 30-second retreat. Is that short enough? Isn't America the land of everything now? 30 seconds, can you do that? And again, you do three things. You stop, you take a deep breath, and then you thank God for two things. That's very short. But you see, the shorter it is, the more often you can do it, actually, because it doesn't take very long. Philippians 4, verse 6 says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done." 30 seconds, that's all. It does make a difference. And if we get into the habit of doing that regularly, very regularly, it does make a difference. But I have to say, there was something in me that when I first started doing this thought, 30 seconds, that just sounds so paltry. Am I saying to God, "I'm sorry, but I'm more important than you are. I've only got 30 seconds to spend with you." And then I remembered when the grandchildren were really quite small, there's one of them in particular, the eldest one, whose name is Talitha. We call her Tally. And I saw Tally quite a lot when she was small, the first 4 years of her life, really. And whenever I arrived, she would come rushing up to me, fling her arms, well, I'd say round me, but it's really round my legs, and then run off again. And it took maybe not even 30 seconds. And how did I, as a granny, I'm called Mimi, how did Mimi feel when Tally came running up, flung her arms around me and ran straight off again? I felt loved. I felt cherished. It was precious. It was brief, heartfelt, wonderful. And it just said she loved me and she was connecting, and then off she went again. It's something I love and which means so much to me. And I thought, that's what it means to the heart of the Father. When I run to Him, throw my arms around Him, as it were, and run off again. It touches the heart of the loved one so deeply. And isn't that what we're doing when we check in with the Lord for a minute, for 30 seconds? It's like flinging our arms around Him and running off again in the way that Tally does to me. And it's precious. And I think the heart of the Father loves it too. You may not be able to go on a long retreat. I don't know young mothers who are able to do that. And it may not be part of your character anyway. That may not be how you would find more of the Lord. But anyone can stop anywhere and do the examen or check in for 30 seconds with God, and do that constantly throughout the day, even while you are flinging the meal in the microwave or crashing the pots and pans into the dishwasher or pushing the cart around the grocery store. And that constant checking in with the Lord transforms us. Ignatius said, it's like a sponge where a drip of water falls on it. The one drip doesn't make a difference, but over time, the constant dripping and the sponge is soaking wet. Now, perhaps it's not the most beautiful analogy to think of ourselves as a dry sponge and that one drip, but actually, checking in with the Lord constantly throughout the day, drip by drip by drip, and our sponge will be full, instead of feeling dry and wrung out by the busyness and the choices and all the rest that goes into making up modern life. Now, you can think of other ways. I've given you two. And as I say, if they help, use them. You perhaps have other ways or other things you can think of that would help you to check in with the Lord and to be in constant touch with him, no matter what your day holds and no matter what you are doing, because we do have stuff to do. But they are two ways that I have found immensely helpful. I know when my children were tiny, as I say, I had three under four at one stage, and it was exhausting. And if I decided to sit down in the morning and take out my Bible, that would be the exact moment that one of them fell off something or crashed into something, you know, or did something. It was almost inevitable. But the constant checking in I could do. I have one friend who actually sets her cell phone alarm to go off to remind her to do it. She's decided to stick with the monastic hours. And so at 12 noon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 6 o'clock in the evening, 9 o'clock at night, her cell phone alarm goes off and that reminds her it's time to check in with God again. Now, you do what helps you. What would remind you that it's time to check in with the Lord again? Maybe every time you open the refrigerator door. How often do you do that in a day? Every time you open that door, check in with God. Every time you drive into the grocery store parking lot, check in with God. Every time you walk into the bathroom, you get a minute's peace and quiet. What a good place to check in with God. You can lock the door and it's just you and him. Use the things that you do regularly to remind you to get into the habit of constantly checking in with God and being in his presence. I love this picture of the sculpture of the little girl nestling into the hand. That's what my checking in with God feels like to me, nestling into his presence as I then go about the rest of my daily life. So using the things that you do regularly or setting a cell phone alarm or some way, I mean, maybe you don't need reminded. Maybe you're so wonderful you can do it anyway. But the rest of us who are normal, we need reminding. We need something that will help us to check in with God and to do that constantly. To keep short accounts with God and to be constantly in his presence. Things that help you to learn the unforced rhythms of grace. To breathe and to be refreshed by the Lord as we go about our everyday life. I have a personal trainer who comes to the house once a week, and he is mean. He's really mean. He makes me do these horrible exercises. And then every so often he'll say, Penelope, don't forget to breathe. You're not breathing. And I'm concentrating so hard on what I'm doing that I forget to breathe. And I think sometimes our walk with the Lord is like that. Our times checking in with him are the equivalent of breathing, and we forget to do it because we're concentrating so hard on the task that we are about. We are so occupied with children in our arms and shopping at our feet and a pile of ironing. No, nobody does ironing anymore, do they? Do you know, I remember when I was a young mum and I asked my pastor's wife how she managed to pray. What did she do to pray and to pray for her children regularly? Dear Elizabeth, she said, well, when I'm ironing their clothes, I pray for each of them as I iron their clothes. Well, we did in those days. Who has an iron these days? Who uses it? Not my daughter. She doesn't iron. So ironing clothes is no way to pray. What do you do? What would help you to remember to pray. That constant checking in with God throughout the day is breathing. It's the breath of your life with God, and we need to do it regularly, day by day. I could go on, but that would give you more choice, and then you'd have difficulty choosing what you were going to do. So I only want to leave you with those two things. The examen, when you look back with thanks, look back with sorrow, and then look forward with anticipation. And the 30-second retreat, when you check in with God constantly in all circumstances, said Paul, and you give thanks for two things. I think that's enough for you this morning, but I would love to know what you do that helps you. And so on the back of your notes on the table, there's some questions for you to discuss in your groups. And one of them is to talk about what helps you. What do you find that's helpful in your life? And to share that with one another on your table. And then I'd like to suggest, because you've got time to do it this morning, that as well as just talking about those questions, you might like to pray with each other. And one of the ways that I like to do it when you're in a group like this is to have the eight of you at the table hold hands, and you pray for the person on your left, and then you pray for the person on your right, all at the same time out loud. So everybody out loud prays for the person on their left, and then everybody prays out loud for the person on their right. And you just simply pray that they would know the presence of the Lord in their lives throughout the day. So you might try that later as well as you talk about your questions. So over to you. Share with each other. How do you find God in your daily life? And how can you help one another to find that? Thank you. Thank you.